In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
You better believe it, Alan Adams is here in studio with us to talk movies and more on Pass the Popcorn. Happy Monday, Al.
And to you, sir.
Happy to hear that your squirrel problem has resolved itself.
So far as we know, like we have not seen like, you know, stuff being chewed on or you know, bits of food or you know, other leavings around. Yeah. Haven't seen any evidence of interlopers since then, so fingers crossed. My absolutely unhinged reaction at the whole thing has the word has spread among the squirrel community,
clearly,
and hopefully there, it's just like, you know, they're like, it's a nice place, but you know what, that guy's a psycho, like you don't want any part of that.
Frankly disappointed that the video of that has not made its way somehow onto social media. Maybe it's out there on the dark web.
Oh, I did. My lovely bride is happily keeping that to herself for now. I imagine it will turn up at some point in the relatively near future.
Nice. So, how was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. Had a nice weekend. Didn't really get up to much, which was kind of nice.
Nothing wrong with that.
You know, sort of enjoyed the weekend. On Friday night, a friend of mine, Sean Lopez, who played played Pazzo in our production of Waiting for Godot. He's an interdisciplinary PhD student, so he had a show recently. We spoke to him. Adam Kirkendall, he's getting his MFA. I don't know if you heard about this.
I know.
But he had his official sort of, his cohort had their official opening on Friday night at Lord Gallery. And so we went and saw that to congratulate Adam, although he's doing an actual screening of his film here in a couple of weeks, which I'm looking forward to.
No, this is not a Sasquatch porn.
No, this is a different thing. Oh, that takes me back. You know, and then on Saturday, sat down with Adam and Jen Shepard over at PTC to record a video sort of talking about memories of the fifth, you know, for the 50th anniversary season.
Yes, I did a piece last weekend for that.
Yep. Yeah. So I sat down, chatted with them for that a little bit, but mostly it was just sort of kicking around the house. We did tried to get a couple projects sort of, you know, underway. But you know, I mean, I did find time to see a couple of movies as well.
Good. I will add, if you're around Memorial Day weekend, if you need anything for the homestead, big yard sale at Carrie's.
Oh, are we cleaning house?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was telling Rich, the garage now has more stuff in it than our house.
Oh.
And everything in the garage is pretty much the same.
Including what you need at Shea Adams, the pool table.
Ah. It's a conversation that we've had in the past. The truth is, we are Shea Adams is not currently equipped to have anything of substance brought into it, because you know, we still don't have a, you know, I mean, do you have a spare kitchen sink? Perhaps I don't know, some,
I got a faucet,
a tin ceiling.
No ceilings. I do have a kitchen sink faucet, though.
Walls? Do you have walls for sale, Gary? Wow.
There's some pieces of sheetrock. Sort of a do-it-yourself wall.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I am not that guy, but thank you. Thank you for even entertaining the possibility that I might be. If Sheridan's listening right now, she's laughing at just the notion of me up there trying to hang drywall. We might swing by, have a look-see.
The more the merrier.
Right on.
I've got to share this with you. So I've been trying to connect and find the opportunity to go visit my high school drama director.
Okay.
And so he sent me a message the other day about getting together, and he said this. I thought you would appreciate. I would love to meet Alan Adams. His writing is of New Yorker quality.
Oh, well, that's very nice.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, a lot of smoke and rainbows being blown right there, but I appreciate that. That's really lovely to hear. It's, you know, it's nice, and I miss it, and you know, we'll try to get in back into the habit of getting the words down on paper here soon. Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, let's talk movies. What did you get to see?
Well, we watched One at Home, and we went to the theater for another one.
Good, good.
I saw the remake of the Ron Shelton classic White Men Can't Jump on Hulu.
There's a remake of that?
There is.
I did not know that.
You're fine. and then I went to see apparently it's I'm supposed to be calling it Fast 10, but you put an X up there, I'm going to say Fast X. So it's Fast X. That's what I went to see at the movie theater on Sunday afternoon. I'm very much looking forward to talking about both of these movies. So whichever one you'd like to start with, I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, I think I want to save White Men Can't Jump till the end. So let's start with Fast Roman Numeral X.
Yes, Fast X. So this is okay. First of all, let's all take a moment and consider how we got to this place. In that there are now 10 Fast and Furious movies.
Wow.
With at least two more planned, because here's the thing, Rich. Fast 10, actually the first in a trilogy.
Oh boy.
So
there are things that weren't covered in the previous nine.
This franchise is one of the most baffling things of the last, you know, quarter century of Hollywood filmmaking. This movie that started off as a very solid, like a tight sort of street racing crime thriller, has turned into this massive action franchise that stopped giving a crap about making any kind of sense, like 10 years ago. Like,
well, when the star died, you know.
Well, like even before that, they had committed to defying physics and not necessarily worrying about narrative continuity in any sort of real way. But one of the things that these later movies have given us is a very obvious willingness to retcon. For those who are unfamiliar, it's a very popular phrase in the comic book community. It stands for retroactive continuity, in which you go back and sort of adjust stories in the past to fit the story going forward. The Fast franchise is littered with this stuff. It's like retcons all the way down. Like it's just like they just keep going. With each subsequent movie, it's like, well, this doesn't make sense unless, you know, something changes, and they just add it into the mix, and it's just this big CGI slurry of explosions and Vin Diesel grunts, and you know, and a cast of like a named cast that's like in the 30s at this point. Like there are just so many characters, so I went to see this movie by myself. Sheridan said, "I'm gonna pass."
Good call, Sheridan.
Yes, Sheridan, an excellent call, because like, and I've seen all these movies. And there were characters that I was clearly supposed to know that I'm just like, who the hell is that? Like, where did this person come from? So I was gonna sit here and be like, oh, there's, you know, here's the plot, but
plot?
Here's the basic gist. we get started a flashback to I believe it's 2015, I think. But it's basically the climactic moment of the of I want to say the Fate and the Furious, but I honestly maybe Fast Five, I forget because again they all blur together.
Right.
The one where they use cars to yank a bank vault out of a building and then drive through the streets of Rio de Janeiro dragging it behind their cars because they're stealing a drug dealer's money or something. Again, it's unclear. Yeah. But anyway. We flash back to that action because, well, the bad guy in that movie died in the course of getting crushed by, again, the giant bank vault that's being dragged down the highway. But as it turns out, you know, our evil drug dealer, his son was also on the scene.
Oh.
And his son survived.
Of course he did.
And, well, he spent the subsequent years plotting his revenge, Rich.
Thinking to himself, boy, if there's 4 or 5 more sequels, I am coming back.
He is coming. Well, we never saw him. And this is what I'm talking about, retcon. We've sort of added a couple of sequences where it's like, oh, okay, so now we're supposed to believe that this guy was here the whole time and blah blah blah. But anyway, it's one of the typical action movie baddie stuff where it's like, oh, you know, you have to pay for what you did to me. You know, and death's too easy. You got to suffer first. And so our bad guy named Dante Reyes, played by franchise newcomer Jason Momoa, because, I mean, there was, you know, we were running apparently we were running low on our big muscly dude quotient in this franchise. So it's like, oh, here we go, Jason Momoa. It makes sense for you to be here, and so he's our bad guy, and he's going to do whatever he can to make Dominic Toretto, the aforementioned Vin Diesel, and everyone close to him suffer for what has been done to Dante Reyes, and then we get our typical globe-trotting adventure, we're reintroduced to all the characters. I'm not even going to go through their names because, frankly, I can't remember most of them. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what their names are anyway. But yeah. And so we go from Rome, and there's a thing in Rome where it's like through a ridiculously convoluted set of circumstances. Now everyone thinks that Dominic Toretto and his friends, they're all terrorists now because of things that happened. Despite the fact that, you know, it's like I call it Ethan Hunt syndrome from the Mission Impossible movies. It's like, you know what? Like, at a certain point, maybe our knee-jerk reaction when it looks like our heroes have done something terrible, maybe we should investigate. Once or twice, sure. But you reach 6-7 times with this stuff. It's like, maybe pump the brakes before you send out armies of shock troops to take out these people, because, well, you know, I mean, fool me 6 times, shame on you. Fool me 7, yeah. Well, shame on me.
There you go.
So the shadowy agency has decided that they're the bad guys, so they go after them. And we have, because there are a million characters in these movies, and so we have all these split sort of plot lines that are just all over the place. You know, you've got Ludacris and Tyrese doing their thing, and then you've got John Cena is watching Vin Diesel's kid for a stretch, and Michelle Rodriguez, who's Vin Diesel's wife, like she's trapped in some sort of weird facility with Charlize Theron, and and just on and on and on, and interspersed throughout you have the standard physics-defying car chases, the ridiculously over-the-top gun battles, extended hand-to-hand combat sequences that, defy all natural law. And, it's all stitched together with vague platitudes about the value of family and Jason Momoa, who, I have to say, has clearly been waiting a very long time to be part of this franchise and is really enjoying himself to a staggering extent. But then it's like you have all the tertiary players who have played parts in various movies along the way. And so it's like, oh, Jason Statham's here. Yeah, he was in some of these movies. And, Brie Larson was in the last two. So there she is. Clint Eastwood's kids shows up for a minute. And, Dame Helen Mirren, because she's part of the the Fast and Furious universe as well. And, if anyone's having more fun than Jason Momoa, it's Dame Helen Mirren. She's so stoked to be here. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, man, these movies are hot nonsense. But you know what? Helen Mirren's having a good time. You know what? There are worse things. The fact that we're at 10 and there are at least 2 more coming is just so baffling. And the evolution of these movies, which is actually, there's actually a sequence, a montage of 3 or 4 minutes long in the movie that sort of addresses how ludicrous this all is. Ludicrous, I just... where we get to basically see little clips pulled from like each of the movies, like explaining the evolution of their like relationship with this the quote unquote agency. And so it's just like when it's all laid out end to end like that, one hopes, because there are those of us who are aware going in how ridiculous this all is. One hopes that maybe, just maybe, people lacking a little bit of that awareness watch this sequence and are like, oh, wait a second. Yeah, this is, wait a second. Because again, like, I'm not going to fault anyone for enjoying these movies. Like, I'm capable of finding plenty of enjoyment in them. It's unfortunate that they are taking the place of other potentially, you know, better, you know, better constructed, more thoughtful offerings. I saw a joke the other day where someone alluded to the idea that that the script to this movie was probably written by ChatGPT. And like watching it, you're like, well, I mean, maybe. Like, put it this way. The Fast and Furious franchise is probably the blockbuster franchise least likely to be genuinely harmed by the ongoing writer's strike. Just have everybody show up, stand in front of a green screen. Vin Diesel will mumble something about La Familia. There'll be a barbecue. They'll drink some Coronas. Maybe Rita Moreno will come back because yeah, she's in this too.
Dear Lord.
And they'll just they'll do their thing. It's difficult to know how to even talk about this movie, like in terms of like plot, because the plot barely exists, or performance, because like these people are all cartoon characters at this point. Although some embrace that cartoonishness more gracefully than others. But yeah, it's a lot of shooting guns and driving cars real fast in ways that are physically impossible. When you back your Camaro out of a moving plane and land on two other cars and then just drive away, it's like, you know what? Maybe these people aren't fully grasping the laws of the universe, the physical laws that govern us, because like none of this makes any sense. And yet, you know, the people at my screening were clearly having a good time. Not as good a time as, again, can't stress enough, Jason Momoa, who is really going for it in a delightful way. But again, Fast 10, Fast 11, Fast 12, you know, it's all, look, they're just gonna keep, I don't know, chipping away at our souls a quarter mile at a time.
All right, from Fast X to I feel like is an unnecessary remake of White Men Can't Jump. I didn't even know this existed. Tell me more.
Well, first of all, you're right. This is, God, I would argue that this is the almost the platonic ideal of unnecessary remake. If you wanted to sort of in a textbook, it's like unnecessary remake. Like this would be a wonderful case study. Mm. It is, it's a Hulu direct to Hulu original, based on the 1992 film by Ron Shelton that starred Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. I haven't watched it in a while, so I wonder how some of it holds up. But as far as like in its time, it was I would argue one of the better sports movies that I'd seen. I really enjoyed it. And again, some of the ideas put forth probably a little simplistic with regards to the notion of, race relations and whatnot. But it's funny. Like, you know, Snipes and Harrelson were great together. Mm-hmm. Very talented. Rosie Perez, a remarkable starring turn, sort of supporting turn in that film as well. And so it's like, oh, you know what? It's been 30 years, which, yikes. But let's do this again. Only this time, let's put Cinqua Walls and Jack Harlow in it.
Okay.
Cinqua Walls, who I think is a relative newcomer. I had not seen him before. Plays the Snipes analog as a former high school star who circumstances led down an unfortunate path. Kamal, his name is. And then you have Jack Harlow, who's noted for being he's a white rapper, like that's his deal.
Yeah.
Apparently the YouTube and TikTok set are quite fond of him, which probably explains why he's in this movie. It's certainly not his acting ability or his basketball ability. So,
really?
Yes, he plays a guy named Jeremy, who is a broken down sort of lifestyle grifter hustler with bad knees, who's still trying to, you know, relive the glory days of his time at Gonzaga, because of course the scraggly white guy went to Gonzaga. So these two sort of cross paths at a gym. There's a bunch of plot nonsense about various 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 basketball tournaments with incredibly lucrative prizes. Kamal is trying to help his wife open a hair salon, whereas Jeremy is trying to support his partner, whose dream is to become a choreographer to the stars. But they both need money to make those things happen, and so despite initial antagonism, they come together and try to make their way through these tournaments to win these big prizes. And that's pretty much it. It's not like the original had the most intricate plot.
No.
You know, like, but it's, you know, you, when you have charismatic, charming performances, and solid, like, athletic action, like, you can forgive some of the thinness of the story.
Mm.
When you don't have these things and all your sort of supporting yourself with is that story, well, now you've got some problems. Script co-written by Kenya Barris and Doug Hall. And Kenya Barris is a gifted writer, has developed a weird affinity for wanting to remake movies for these streaming services. He was also responsible, he was responsible for that that absolutely terrible Zach Braff Cheaper by the Dozen remake that came out sometime last year. God, it doesn't even matter. Like, it's gone. Just like this movie will be gone from the consciousness sooner rather than later. But yeah, like, the basketball is not good, and the acting is worse. Specifically, Jack Harlow is actively terrible. Like, terrible. Like, and it's like, I don't like saying that sort of thing, because, you know, it's, you know, it feels dismissive, and, you know, you don't necessarily want to poo-poo someone's, like, hard work. One, I would argue that this perhaps wasn't hard work. And two, you reach a certain point and you have to be like, okay, like, let's pump the brakes, because I don't know how far down the list of, like, noted actors you would have to get to find someone who would be worse in this role than Jack Harlow. You could pull two randos off the set of, like, a Lifetime movie and send them out there, and it would be better than what we got here. It's staggering how little chemistry these guys had. Like, at a certain point, and, you know, it's frightening because this guy ostensibly makes his living through, you know, his gift for language. Like, half the time his lines sounded like he was saying them phonetically. Like, he had no concept of the meaning of the words that he was saying.
Yeah.
And Chinqua Allen is better, but I mean, like that's, you know, a low bar to clear. The female characters have no agency. Like, they're plot devices at best. There are a couple attempts to sort of pay homage to the original movie that fall wildly flat, including there's a wonderful scene in the original movie where a dude realizes he got hustled, and so he goes back to his car to get a gun, and it's like, you know, and again, that's problematic for any number of reasons, but in the moment it was very funny. So in this film, he goes to the guy upset at being beaten, goes to his car to get a flamethrower. he clears the court with a flamethrower, and it's like, and this is, we're like 20 minutes in, and it's just like, and I just turn and I look at Sheridan and I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. I apologize. I have to finish watching this. You don't. So feel free to move along if you would like. But she's a trooper. She hung in there with me. She didn't want me to suffer in silence by myself. But yeah, it's like you said, like there's literally no need for this movie. For any number of reasons, like the original stands on its own. The sort of themes, underlying themes of the original movie, the landscape has changed so much in 30 years. And like, you have to, like, to make a movie like this now, to make this particular movie now, like, you should really have something to say.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be a point behind remaking this movie, because it is so different now, and like the dynamics of race relations have changed in a lot of ways, some for the better, many for the worse, but it is different. And you know, and the idea that, you know, we're still like, it's 2023, like, I mean, not to be reductive, but it's like, a white dude won the dunk contest.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not like, you know, like the stereotypes aren't prevalent in the same way that they used to be. You know, there are a couple of good jokes. Like, our man Jeremy's like primary, like, gym rival, is a dude who went to Duke. And so he's the clean cut white guy.
Sure.
You know, your floor slapping Wojo type, you know, so it's like, and then you've got the grizzled, I don't know if Jack Harlow was trying to get a Dan Dickow, like Adam Morrison kind of thing happening, but that's certainly the energy that was coming.
Wow.
But I don't know. It's the sort of thing where I almost want to encourage people, if they're interested in a hate watch, I think this would fit the bill, particularly if you have fond memories of the original, because it's relatively short. You'll go through it, like, you'll get good and riled up while you watch it, and then the credits will roll and you can immediately forget about it, because it's an utterly disposable piece of cinema. And like white men can't jump, they can't shoot, they can't dribble, they can't pass, like they can't even hit the rim, like they can't even find the court, like it's like that's what we're talking about here. It's not good, Rich.
As always, we often say, thank you for watching so we don't have to.
Hey, man. You know, it's most of the time it's my pleasure. This time I'm not so sure.
Alan Adams, pass the popcorn. Thank you, Al.
Of course.
See you next week.
Yes, sir.
Actually, no, because we're off next
Monday. Oh, that's right. For the Memorial Day.
Yeah, 2 weeks we'll see you.
Yes, you will.